Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
And we have a fairly busy podcast this week. We have two wide releases, I think, that are, I'm going to go ahead and look into the future, that we're both going to be, they're going to be panned. This is a panning episode.
Yes.
But we're going to turn it around with 2016's Best Documentary.
Mm-hmm. And, well, Best Documentary according to you.
Oh, according to me. I know you liked it, though.
I liked it.
There's a nominee for Best Foreign Film.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, something that's actually, it's in limited release, like one or two theaters, but it's going to be on PBS next week. We're going to talk about that as well. But first, the wine, Hannah.
The wine. It's very good.
So you don't know what it is yet. It is a Merlot. Mm-hmm. But when I show you the title, I want to see if you can connect it to one of this week's films.
Okay. So it's from the Red Rock Winery. And so let's see.
I had trouble connecting this, but I think you should be able to get this.
I don't know. It might be a bit of a leap. The Red Rock Winery. It doesn't have anything to do with the movie I missed, does it?
No, it has nothing to do with that. You've seen this movie.
And so, wow. I'm stumped.
What if I said Space Between Us? Where does he start? Where's he from? Where does he live?
Red
Rock. It's the best
I
could do.
Okay. See, I blanked on that movie. I already wiped that movie from my memory.
Well, we'll go ahead and start with that movie. We saw this movie called Space Between Us way back in
November
2016. If you can remember that far, there once a time called November 2016. It was before the election, I think. This movie, and it got bumped. It got bumped to January, February timeframe, meaning the studio knows they had something rotten on their hands. And they do. This is just a rotten film. They took Mars, think The Martian with Matt Damon, and said, let's make Matt Damon into a 16-year-old boy played by Asa Butterfield. Let's give him an internet romance and ship him back to Earth to see if he can pick up this chick. Am I too far off, Hannah?
No, unfortunately, that pretty much sums it up. I really so wanted to like this movie, and I remember coming out of it and going, I'm not surprised. I think we found out it was being bumped the same time that we were going to see it. Mm. Like, they made that decision within 24 hours of when our screening was, so we went to see it anyway. And you came out of that movie and you went, it was just so weak.
Well, the tagline is on the movie poster, what is your favorite thing about Earth? And I remember I told the publicist that I never have to see this stupid movie again.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were going to use that as their answer. And so I think the poor tagline was setting up some really brutal responses.
Well, it starts off with this Steve Jobs / Elon Musk guy. He's played by Gary Oldman, and he's this NASA scientist. And he's, I think he's a private company like SpaceX. Mm-hmm. And the first astronaut crew is about ready to blast off. And they're going to go live, and they're going to go research on Mars. And they're going to live there for a very long time. But the mission commander, a very good-looking young lady, apparently parties a little too hard the night before and spends her entire voyage to Mars going through three trimesters. And she gives birth, the first zero gravity birth. The baby survives. That's Asa Butterfield. She does not survive. So he grows up an orphan, a classified orphan, because they do not tell Earthlings there was a baby born on Mars. And that's when it does the big 16-year jump.
Right. And, the premise, just even the way this movie kicked off, it was just so, it looked like one of these huge launch parties where, this guy, actually, I felt that the SpaceX-ish guy looked a lot like Richard Branson, setting up his old Virgin Atlantic and Virgin America and Virgin Space Crusades. And so I couldn't get that out of my mind throughout the movie. And the way they said some of this stuff is it became very predictable. And the dialogue was just incredibly cheesy. And you just went, how in the world would this astronaut had been allowed to, were there no like early pregnancy tests that she had to take before she actually got on this little rocket ship? I was like, come on. It just was so, it just was such a stretch.
You mentioned the cheesy dialogue. I think cheesy's being very kind. This script was just is terribly written, especially the dialogue. And I wrote down my favorite one because I'm going to continue quoting this for years to come. And the girl's, he's talking to a girl named Tulsa. She's very geographically named Tulsa. And he says, "You act like you hate the world, Tulsa. That beautiful music you make gives you away. Kill me now." By the way, Tulsa, probably the best geographic name since Nicolas Cage in Gone in 60 Seconds when he was Memphis Reigns.
Yeah. Sadly, Tulsa, played by Britt Robertson.
We just saw her, by the way. We saw her last week.
What was she in?
She was in A Dog's Purpose. She was young Hannah.
Oh, and that's another thing. There are too many movies with characters named Hannah coming out all the time. It's very distracting.
Oh, we just saw one.
We saw one last night. Yeah. We saw one last week.
But we can't talk about that yet.
I know we can't talk about it, but boy, I'm just getting sort of tired of hearing my name like for 2 hours on end.
Tell me about it, Hannah.
With very bizarre characters. But Britt Robertson, my problem with her in this role was I felt there was just absolutely zero chemistry to me between her as Tulsa and Asa Butterfield as, you know, this boy who had been born on Mars, and they had connected on, you know, somehow he was still able to develop an internet romance, even though they were, you know, galaxies apart. But so when he finally gets to Earth and he meets her, it would have worked as a romance if you'd felt some chemistry between them. But there's a big age difference. There's like a 9-year gap or 10-year gap in reality between these two actors. And I felt that. And it didn't work for me. So I think when you take all the missteps that this movie made and you combine them all, it's just a film that could have been better and just fell really, really flat, which is a shame because generally I would love a space drama romance. But this is the second one in a row, kind of like Passengers, you know, that
Passengers is way better.
Exactly. I mean, this one made Passengers look like, you know, Oscar contention worthy.
Well, this is directed by a man named Peter Chelsom, and it's been a while since we've seen him. I remember he did 2001's Serendipity. Oh. Not a bad romance.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And it was written. I knew there was something about the screenwriter, so I looked him up. His name's Alan Loeb, and he's the guy who turned Kevin James into a mixed martial artist in Here Comes the Boom. And my voice is going out right now because I have a cold.
Sorry.
But it's well enough because I don't think we need to spend any more words on this worthless, stupid movie.
I think some people will watch it on an airplane eventually or on Netflix or something, and it'll just be... They'll just have considered it sort of a waste of time, but not in a horrifying way like some other movies. But it's not worth seeing in the theater at all.
You unknowingly just gave me a transition.
Oh.
The next stupid movie we're going to talk about, they will not ever show on an airplane because they never show on airplanes any film that something bad happens on an airplane. And the opening to Rings, which should be called The Ring 3 because it is a sequel to The Ring 2, starts on an airplane. I don't know why they call it Rings. It should be The Ring 3. So The Ring came out in 2002. It was terrifying. I remember the dread and the terror in the theater when I saw it. And then 2005, they made The Ring 2, which nobody saw. And, cause The Ring made a whole bunch of money. So number two didn't make any money. Jump, gosh, what is it, 12 years later now, to Rings. And Naomi Watts is not back. She was the star of the first two. Now it's a bunch of no names. Except Vincent D'Onofrio, he's in it. And if you know The Big Bang Theory, Johnny Galecki, he plays Leonard Hofstadter.
Okay.
He's in it. Everyone knows the premise of The Ring. You watch this short clip on a video cassette, because back in 2002 and 2005, VCRs were still in the family living room, and then you get a phone call, and it says, 7 days. And in 7 days, you are going to die. She's going to come out of the TV screen. Samara is her name. She's going to come out of the TV screen. She's going to kill you. You learn what the ring is in the first ring, and then they do it all over in the second ring. And they're still explaining it to you in this movie. Oh, 7 days means this. We know. Don't spend 20 minutes telling me about 7 days. All right. our main couple, because they're a couple. You know the guy, only a little bit. His name's Alex Rowe. You know him from The Fifth Wave. He was the guy who kept taking his shirt off in the woods.
Ah, yes, yes.
And it's the first time we've seen her. Her name is Matilda Lutz. She's Italian, and she really sounds it. She's just terrible acting, and I think it's her just trying to get an American accent. And the catchphrase on the poster is, first you watch it, then you die. And that's exactly what you feel like watching this movie. I watched it, and I was dying inside, because it's not scary. It has some cheap jump scares, you know, where it's quiet, and all of a sudden they make a loud noise, and you're supposed to jump in your seat. But she comes out of the TV to kill people twice in, like, the first half hour, and you're like, you know what, this isn't new anymore. I've seen this. It's not a big deal. So he goes off to college. She stays behind to take care of her mother, who we never even see. It must not be a big deal. He watches the video cassette. Doesn't return a phone call. She gets scared, goes finds him, yada, yada, yada. They end up in a small town to solve this mystery of where the whole thing started, enter Vincent D'Onofrio. So now the technology is advanced. They're not looking at it anymore on video cassettes. You can now right-click and copy-paste this video, because to survive the curse, if you watch this, you had to make a copy of the video cassette. And if I saw it, I would have to show it to you, and then I would be safe, but then you would be screwed. And you would have to make a copy of it and show it to somebody. And on and on and on and on. Kind of like It Follows,
like
if you saw It Follows.
Like an evil chain letter.
And it's like an evil chain letter. And it had three screenwriters. And one of them is an Oscar winner. Akiva Goldsman wrote A Beautiful Mind. And it's got some of the... It's not as bad as Space Between as dialogue, but the dialogue is right up there. What and... Oh, are you a Friday Night Lights girl? I thought you were a Friday Night Lights girl.
I mean, I've seen it a few times. I'm more of a Kyle Chandler girl.
Well, you remember Kyle Chandler's daughter, Julie?
Mm-hmm.
She shows up here. She's yeah. She's aged a little bit. Amy Teagarden is early on in this movie. She doesn't make it to the end. Sorry, spoilers.
Darn!
To show you, there are omens to why this is terrible. It was filmed 3 years ago, and it sat on the shelf because I think it went through heavy re-edits. They bumped it. They bumped the release date like three times. It was supposed to come out last summer. And then I think it was supposed to come out in the winter, and now it's finally oozing out in early February. The trailer. I watched the trailer when I came home, and half of it is not in the movie. They recut it. And the big review, and you've been wondering what it is all film, and you finally, okay, that's what it means. They give it away in the trailer, because I guess in the first edit, it wasn't a big deal. They hadn't cut it that way. So he actually says, oh, this means that. And you're like, oh my lord, if I had seen this trailer before, I would be so mad.
Well, it was similar with The Space Between Us, where I actually went back and I watched the trailer because it had been so long since I had seen this movie. And that one, too, you realize they pretty much give everything away in the trailer. And so I think there's a point to be made here that if a movie keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed, even if it's only, whether it's months or years, that's a pretty strong sign. I was smart enough not to go see Rings to begin with.
I was pretty mad about that, by the way. You said you were going. I'm looking around for you. And I was like, she cheated.
I know. I bailed for various reasons, but not the least of which was that I never saw the first one. I never saw the second one.
And technically you don't have to, because they spend so much time explaining
well,
it to you.
Well, probably for people like me. So it might be one of those films that for someone who has not seen the previous two, maybe they'll like it a little more. But from everything that I heard from everyone who did go to see it, I was relieved at the choice that I made. And and I don't think I'm ever going to be catching it. However, they did have a pretty brilliant marketing campaign. And, you know, I did see the one of their scare viral video things went viral, where the girl comes, was like, maybe it was filmed at a Best Buy or something, and people are looking at all these big screen TVs, and the girl all of a sudden comes crawling out of one of the TVs and scares the bejesus out of the customers. That was pretty clever.
Well, I hope you didn't stay away because you don't like horror films. You don't like to be scared, because it's not scary.
No, it was. I stayed away because I decided I needed an evening to watch some of the other Oscar stuff, which we will talk about later. But I was. I do not regret my choice at all.
Because I know you don't like horror films.
I don't. I generally do not like horror
films. But this is not a horror film. It's just a stupid.
Well, you know what I hate more than horror films? Stupid films.
No, this is right up there then. This is right up there. And there's a third somewhat wide release this week starring Robert De Niro. It's called The Comedian, We didn't see it. It was on a Monday. It was way really far away. I mean, if you understand where we live and like how hard it is to get to Georgetown, you would understand.
Yeah, that was even a different one. That was like that West End.
At the West
cinema.
End, which is on the border of DuPont and Georgetown. Yeah. It's like it's in the, you do not go over there. It's getting panned. Like, apparently, this is not a good movie, and so I don't really feel bad for missing the comedian.
No, I feel like they put it as out of reach as possible for us to see, and now we know why.
But our next film is my favorite documentary of 2016. I still can't stop thinking about it, and we saw it a long time ago. It's called I Am Not Your Negro, and it's directed by a man named Raoul Peck. We saw him do a Q&A, and he was very good.
Yes, he was.
Explaining it. It's like a film essay. And he obtained the rights to the entire canon of James Baldwin. James Baldwin is a man, I think, who's getting forgotten. His legacy and who he was is getting forgotten. Apparently, he used to be really famous in the civil rights era. He was a social commentator, an essayist, an author. And he used to go on TV a lot because he was kind of the talking head. All right, you're an African-American. Explain to us why, like on the Dick Cavett Show, it's 1968. You know, you guys have all these rights now, and you've got black mayors, and... why are you guys still so mad? And you could just see James Baldwin like, I don't even know where to begin, Dick. And so it's based on an unfinished memoir. So James Baldwin was very good friends with all Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King Jr., and Malcolm X. And those are kind of like three segments of the film. It's like, okay, here's my story with Medgar Evers, and it goes down there, then King, then X. And, yeah, that takes up most of the film. Mm-hmm. It's narrated by Samuel L. Jackson, who creates his own character as a narrator. Just a very good job. But there's no talking heads in it. Like, no one's interviewed telling you who James Baldwin was.
The talking head is James Baldwin.
The entire film is James Baldwin, unfiltered, uninterrupted, no mechanism, no medium between him and me. He's talking to me. And when he's not, it's Samuel Jackson talking to me, but Baldwin's words. And I thought, what a good idea.
It was a good idea, but that confused me a little bit. There were times throughout this documentary where I was not quite sure whether I was hearing Samuel L. Jackson doing some sort of narration or whether I was hearing archival audio and video of James Baldwin. So it was so similar that it made it difficult sometimes for me to discern exactly whose voice we were hearing.
It's nominated for Best Documentary. And a lot of people are cataloging it next to Ava DuVernay's 13th. There are some parallels to O.J. Made in America. I think this is just better than both of those. Because it connects to today. It connects a past legacy, a guy who's been dead 30 years, and no one really knows, at least my age or younger, doesn't really know who he is. Older than me, you probably do. And it connects it directly to today. Like he would have so much to say about Trayvon or Michael Brown. And Dick Cavett asked him the question, could you imagine, who do you think will be the first black president? And he just turns around and said, it doesn't matter who the first black president is. It matters what kind of country he is president of. I'm like, well, that's a brilliant answer.
It is. I mean, there's definitely a lot to be gleaned from this that's definitely a lesson for our times. And I like this one better than 13th. I feel it. They're getting lumped together, but this one is the more unique approach to a documentary and a more refreshing documentary and something that we just haven't seen before. And it does, you know, bring to light this guy that most people will not remember or have heard of outside of people who were very familiar with the civil rights movement at the time, you know, who were pretty much at least young adults in the 60s and 70s. So I applaud it. It wasn't my favorite documentary of the year. It would not be my top choice for that category, but it certainly is worthy of viewing.
It jolted me. He had this thesis that of white naivete. You have this vision of innocence, and he pointed out Doris Day and Gary Cooper, the most grotesque version of innocence that never existed. And you're listening to this Doris Day tune. It's very innocent and sweet. She's singing about like cupcakes or something. And while she's singing that, we're seeing lynchings and dead African Americans swinging from trees. And the dichotomy of that is it blew my mind. And it was last year I read the new Ta-Nehisi Coates nonfiction thing, and the blurb on it says, this generation is the new James Baldwin. It's like, well, who the hell is James Baldwin? And now I know.
Yeah.
And I hope this teaches a lot more people who he is, because what a good time for him to return.
And it's a great choice for Black History Month, so there you go.
There it is. Just after that is a foreign film. It's nominated for Best Foreign Film of the Year. I didn't think it was going to win, but I think it's going to win now. Hannah, why is it going to win now?
It's going to win now possibly because it was directed by an Iranian who can no longer come into the United States under the current immigration ban.
You're talking about Asghar Farhadi, and the film is The Salesman. Now, Farhadi just won the Best Foreign Film Oscar 4 years ago, in 2012, for A Separation. He's also filmed About Ellie, probably my favorite of his, and The Past, which came out in 2013. And The Salesman was filmed in Iran. He's an Iranian filmmaker, actually lives in Iran making Iranian films. These are our Persian-Iranian actors. And the Salesman means, actually, Death of a Salesman. These are culture, it's a culture couple. They're actors, they're directors, and they're putting on their version of Death of a Salesman. And it's kind of funny at times, because mm-hmm. there's a scene where the mistress is supposed to be in her nightgown or naked, and she walks out in a raincoat and scarf, because right. in Iran, you can't do that on stage. And it's like, all right, that's funny, I see what you're doing there. And yeah, he was nominated, and he said, I'm not coming to the Oscars. I'm going to protest the new ban, the new travel ban on my country. And I think because of that, this is going to get a lot more votes than it would have. It's not my favorite foreign film of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't think it is a lot of people's. But now
it will,
it's in the news.
And without a doubt, this movie will benefit from that exposure. And I liked it. I thought the acting was very good in it. It's a foreign film. Again, you just sort of need to like watching a foreign film. It's in Farsi with English subtitles. But the acting is good enough that you really can get drawn in. And it's really, it's just about, it's a psychological thriller and crime drama sort of wrapped in one. And it's, yeah, this couple who's putting on Death of a Salesman, the Arthur Miller play. They have been forced out of their apartment because of structural issues with it. And they land in this flat that has had a suspicious previous tenant who had a lot of gentleman callers. And what happens is that the turns out that the wife gets attacked. And really what happens from that point on is just this story unfolding about the attack and whether it should be reported to police and the plight of women in Iran and the male psyche in Iran and how that all comes to play and how the husband sort of takes it on himself. He's on a revenge mission to discover who attacked his wife and to get revenge. And you really don't know where it's going to go. And I found that the ending was very powerful.
It does. She gets assaulted in her new apartment. And the film kind of just changes from this family drama to mystery mm-hmm. and vigilante justice. There's a lot about the patriarchal society in that country. It's more about the assault on his manhood as the husband than her assault.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't go to the police. And a lot of people are like, of course you don't go to police. You don't go to police for this. You know, your manhood's been assaulted. You go find him. You go take care of this. And it's not my favorite Farhadi film. It's not a throwaway either. It's middle of the road.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of metaphor here that I just haven't taken the time to figure it out.
Yeah.
Their first apartment they're in, the building starts to really literally fall apart. And I'm sure that means something, but I don't know what. And I'm sure that the play that they're using, Death of a Salesman, connected to their real
right.
lives,
exactly.
I'm sure, I have no doubt.
Yes.
It means something, but I don't know what it means.
I know, I'm sure there was a lot more subtext to the play within the movie that that we might have been missing. But ultimately, it's sad to watch. Nobody really wins. And so it's kind of a downer.
That's a standard theme in vigilante justice. Even if you get your revenge, you never win. So that's not the most original theme.
But as foreign films go, knowing that I'm not a huge foreign film buff, I like this one.
It's better than Tony Erdmann.
I liked it way more than Tony Erdmann, maybe because it was only like, you know, what, one. but I still, I would put A Man Called Ove is still my favorite for that particular category at the Oscars.
Yeah, A Man Called Ove might have had a chance.
A Man Called Ove.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's gone now.
I know. It's going to be a – but if nothing else, this puts a little extra intrigue and suspense into the Oscars. So thank you, Trump, for that.
When you're making your picks for the Oscar pools, know your current events about this film, because it's in the news. And if a film's in the news, it will get more votes.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, our next film is also a documentary, but we're actually kind of talking about a TV film. It is in a couple theaters this week, especially in D.C. It's in one. But next Tuesday, February 7th, on PBS, under American Experience, there's a documentary called Oklahoma City. And it begins with the actual bombing, the day of the bombing in, 1995?
April 19th, 1995.
The Alfred P. Murrah Building, federal building in downtown Oklahoma City. And then it jumps back. It says, you know what? Timothy McVeigh didn't just become Timothy McVeigh that morning. Something shaped him. He became the person he was over time. And it says two reasons. Ruby Ridge in 92 and Waco in 93. Mm-hmm. And there was a big rise of the white nationalist neo-Nazi movement. And it's like that created Timothy McVeigh. I have my own thoughts about this documentary before I get to it, but I want to hear what you thought about this.
Well, I remember that day so vividly. I really do. And it was the worst case of domestic terrorism. And I think the memory of it got lost after 9/11. And so there was an important distinction that this was, this is a homegrown terrorist. He was the all-American looking guy next door almost. And I remember that the initial reaction was that it must have been some sort of Middle East terrorist. And that turned out not to be the case. And so what this documentary does, even though I was not thrilled with the structure of it, I thought it was a little wonky at times, what it's trying to do is sort of connect the dots and to what happens when you have this sudden rise of nationalism and white supremacy, and it's scary right now. So I think it's one of those movies that just resonates at the moment, because it's what everyone's biggest fear is that, that you're going to end up with that sort of rise again, where you have these lone wolf domestic terrorists who have a beef with a group or a government and have no regard for what they call the collateral damage. I mean, in this case, Timothy McVeigh had absolutely no remorse for what he did. And I do like that this film, you hear his voice. You hear him talk about the bombing. And, and even knowing that, he killed 168 people, 19 kids who were in the daycare center. It's horrifying. And he just considered that collateral damage and sort of payback for the way that the government had responded, at Waco and Ruby Ridge. And so it just, it's a cautionary tale. And I think it behooves people to remember at times like this, what happened back then and do everything they can to make sure it doesn't happen again. Because 1995, it's not all that long ago.
Yeah, you're right about the no remorse and hearing his voice. He's proud he did it. He said it was a counterattack. It's a counterattack because of Waco, and there's going to be more of me. And my biggest problem with this is it felt like more news than documentary. I didn't learn very many new things. Okay, it was a good recap. I remember Ruby Ridge. I remember Waco, and I remember Oklahoma City. Thanks for the recap. And we've got some updated interviews with some of the first responders, some of the parents from the daycare, some of the hospital staff in Oklahoma City that received the victims. Okay, that's nice to see update. Remember 22 years after the fact. 22 years after the fact. And, I didn't really. Finally, at the end, I learned some new information in the Where Are They Now segment. It's like, oh, okay, that happened to that guy. I remember that name.
Right, right. When you hear Michael Fortier's name.
Yeah, it's like, I haven't heard Michael Fortier's name
Terry
since it
Nichols
happened.
And
so it's okay. That was the most interesting part was the last 30 seconds on the Where Are They Now. Because everything else, I already knew. There was no new information about Ruby Ridge. There's no new information about Waco.
No, but that's also what makes it more of a PBS American Experience documentary versus the kind of documentary that releases wide on big screens, across the country. It does have more of a expanded Dateline kind of feel or 60 Minutes. But what it's doing that I don't think we'd necessarily seen before is putting all these pieces in one place with, I mean, to see, I don't remember, I'm sure I did at the time because I was doing a lot of news back then. And so I do kind of vaguely remember that there was footage of Timothy McVeigh at Waco selling bumper stickers out of his car.
I had not seen that video.
And so to see stuff like that, where you're like, when people go, I never would have expected it from this guy, when you realize how important it is for people to take note of who's around and what people are doing at various times and in various situations, I think that was kind of fascinating. But it's really, I think what it's trying to do, as opposed to being a documentary about the Oklahoma City bombing, because you're not really hearing much about the 168 victims. You know, a lot of other things would have gone into more of the stories of the victims and the families.
No, it's not about them.
It is truly about showing how Timothy McVeigh went from Army veteran from the Gulf War to domestic terrorist. And so connecting those dots and including that Waco, Ruby Ridge, Oklahoma City all under one umbrella, I think is informative and interesting. Is it groundbreaking? No, but definitely interesting for our times as well. A lot of stuff out there right now that just seems to resonate more than it might have in any other time.
Well, since The Salesman and I Am Not Your Negro may not be playing in your area of the country right now, this is available to everyone. So on Tuesday, set your DVRs if you want to check this out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that long. It's like 90 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of video footage you haven't seen. And I did not know McVeigh showed up at Waco until I saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, it's just a really good reminder of where you were. You know, I was a freshman in high school, by the way.
I was not.
All right, quick look ahead to next week. I know you wanted to plug something.
Yes, I definitely want to plug, and it's something for people to keep their eyes out for if they see this playing somewhere near them. The Oscar documentary shorts are going to be out there starting next Friday.
I usually don't see those.
They're one that they run like 20 to 40 minutes each. There's five of them, and they are just, to me, they were better than any of the long documentaries that I had seen. And they were just so moving and powerful. And there are these heartbreaking stories about immigration and the refugee crisis, the humanitarian crisis, and the white helmets in Syria.
I remember your favorite 2016 documentary. I'm pretty sure it was Gleason. Compare it to was Gleason not better than any of these five?
I'll tell you, I think I cried more watching these five.
Because you bawled during Gleason.
I bawled a bit during Gleason, and I bawled during these 20 to 40 minute documentaries. So I think what makes this different is that these, you know, we're a short attention span kind of country. And if you want to just see just very powerful, shorter, it's just some documentaries can be shorter. And I think it proves that it doesn't have to be 80, 90, 100, 110, 120 minutes to be a good movie. These all five of them managed to take a single subject and just absolutely tell a fascinating, emotional story that I think will resonate with a lot of people. And so I just highly recommend that folks go out and find this. You can go to, I think, Oscars.com, and there's a link to where these will be showing as well.
And I think we'll also discuss the live-action shorts and the animated shorts. Mm-hmm. But next week is actually the week of sequels. There's three of them. Lego Batman Movie, which is a sequel to the Lego Movie. John Wick Chapter 2. And 50 Shades Darker.
The second in the trilogy.
50 Shades Darker. We're going to get some more Anastasia Steele.
We will get more Anastasia Steele and some more Christian Grey as well. So I know you're looking forward to that one, Charlie.
The one I'm most looking forward to is Lego Batman, because I love the Lego Movie.
You know, it's true. I'm actually very excited for the relief and what I hope will be just the sheer fun of the Lego Batman Movie. I hope it gives us that. And frankly, after the ones that we saw, like with The Space Between Us and the one that we saw last night, is that one next week? That's two weeks.
No, it's 2 weeks from now. I can't wait till we talk about that one.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, I've got to get that one out of my head.
We need a palate cleanser after
that. Totally. And to me, I do believe that 50 Shades darker will likely be the palate cleanser for me.
Well, quick recap. We started out with just two rotten duds. The Space Between Us, they turned Matt Damon into a teenager, and man, it stinks.
Bring back Matt. Go watch The Martian again.
Rings, The Ring 3. It's a horror film that's not scary at all, and it's actually a Scooby-Doo mystery.
I like Scooby-Doo, so don't be dissing on Scooby.
This makes Scooby-Doo look like the Lego movie. I Am Not Your Negro, my personal favorite documentary of 2016, and couldn't be more timely, even though it's about a man who lived 30 years ago.
Not my favorite, but definitely very good.
The Salesman, it's in current news for certain reasons. Not my favorite Farhadi, but you can do a lot worse.
I suspect it is my favorite Farhadi.
How many Farhadis have you seen?
One.
There you go. You kill me. Oklahoma City, you know, if you're going to, I'd say don't watch it live. DVR it, and if you just want to recall where you were, because you're not going to learn too much.
No, but it's got a few tidbits that are really interesting and definitely a good movie for our time as well.
Well, thank you very much for listening. Hope you have a good movie week. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.